Welcome to this RCGP podcast on gambling. This is the first of a two-part podcast, which is part of a wider course that includes four e-learning modules. I'm Dr. Tony Hazel, GP and Deputy Medical Director for e-learning at the RCGP. Today, I'll be talking to Dr. Emma Ryan, GP partner and clinical lead at the Primary Care Gambling Service. We're going to be discussing the role of GPs in supporting patients who may present to primary care with gambling issues and Emma's role in raising awareness of gambling harm. Thank you for joining us today, Emma.
Thank you. Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
So to start, could you give us some background information on gambling in the UK? It's not something I remember learning much about during training.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Gambling and its harms is not in the curriculum at medical school, and it wasn't in my postgraduate training either. But through my work in this area, I've become increasingly aware that those suffering gambling harms do attend the GP for help. And in fact, due to the lack of knowledge in this area, both in recognising gambling harms and gambling addiction as a health problem, it means that often there are missed opportunities to help those suffering. This is also compounded by a lack of awareness amongst healthcare professionals about services that do exist to help people in this area. Going forward, however, there are NICE guidelines currently being developed, and these are expected to be published in March 2024. And these will provide some guidance to the NHS and also really raise awareness of the problem amongst those who work in the NHS. The other issue is that gambling in the UK has become increasingly accessible. So whereas in the past people have had to go to land-based buildings, so to betting shops, to get involved in gambling, because we now all have smartphones, which we can access online websites and online casinos, we can now gamble 24/7 from the comfort of our home. And so that has really resulted in accessibility that has meant it's easy for everyone and anyone to get involved in gambling. Society as well, of course, doesn't help. It's been normalised in the UK as a popular leisure activity, supported by adverts at prime time for gambling, and also football and its sponsorship are heavily involved in advertising gambling operators. And of course, the National Lottery, which many of us wouldn't even think of as partaking in gambling, but it is a form of gambling. So to put it into perspective, up to 59% of adults in Great Britain have gambled in the last 12 months. So that's about 30.5 million of us. Great Britain has one of the largest gambling markets in the world. The UK gambling market made a £14.2 billion profit in 2020. And we also have approximately 9,000 licensed gambling premises in Great Britain. And unfortunately, these are mostly located in areas of deprivation. So it is widespread in the UK, and it really is important that we raise awareness.
So our patients have lots and lots of opportunities to gamble, and obviously they might come to us when they're struggling to control their gambling. So what is gambling disorder and how might it present to a GP?
So I think it is important to understand the formal definition so that we know what we are looking for. So there is a definition set out by ICD-11, and that states that gambling disorder is characterized by a pattern of persistent or recurrent gambling manifested by an impaired control of gambling that has an increased priority, taking precedence over other daily activities and life interests, which continues or even escalates despite negative consequences. So when we see someone suffering gambling harms in clinic, they are overwhelmed by the urge to gamble, and they're ignoring work, they're ignoring their family because that's all they can think about. And obviously, as mentioned before, because they've got their smartphone, they can access any site with it, really is a huge problem.
So in our e-learning modules, which accompany this podcast, we talk about gambling harms. Can you outline what these are and other than obviously the person who's gambling, who might be affected?
Yeah, so I think there's a common perception that harm from gambling is restricted to relationships and financial losses. However, it's really important to get across that it can cause health problems. Of course, mental health problems, in that it can cause stress, it can cause anxiety, low mood and depression, but also it can be manifested as physical health problems such as insomnia, high blood pressure, general fatigue and lack of well-being. So it's important we as healthcare professionals recognise that. It can also cause workplace harms. So often in the clinic, we see patients that have stayed up all night gambling, but then have to go in to work the next morning and work a full day. And so often there is underperformance at work. They can't concentrate. If they've had a big loss, that's all they can think about. They're thinking about drawing back those losses. So it can affect progression at work and also those work colleagues that work around you. And also a really important one not to forget is cultural harms. So there is a huge stigma attached to gambling in some cultures, and this prevents individuals unable to seek help, and they suffer with a huge amount of shame because they are scared for their family that if their gambling is exposed, this will place concern from their community and can really limit their progression in the community with respect to work opportunities and also life events such as marriage.
Yes, I can imagine that the stigma must be huge and that must be very stressful for the person. So I'm sure that anyone can find themselves affected by gambling, but are there any particular groups who are at higher risk?
Yes. The other thing to mention, of course, is that there are individuals immediately surrounding the person that is suffering gambling harms. So close friends, family, or as I mentioned, it may be work colleagues or flatmates that notice it. And so it's important to get across that these affected others also are suffering with the individual and that there is also support and treatment available for them. So it's often forgotten that those surrounding the person also need support. We know that whilst men are more likely to be affected by gambling disorder, women are more likely to be the affected other, and they can feel huge stigma and fail to seek help. The other groups to think about when you're in consultation is men are more likely to be experiencing harm than women. And young people, so people aged between 18 and 24 years, people living in areas of deprivation, so people that are more disadvantaged or from minority communities. So those cohorts are the other ones to just keep it in your mind that if they present with anxiety, upset or poor well-being, that you think about gambling harms.
So as you just said, men are more likely to have issues with gambling themselves and women are more likely to be affected by other people's gambling harms. Is that difference static or is it changing over time?
It is. The gap in gambling is narrowing, and this is mainly to do with online accessibility. So women are now doing much more online gambling than they would have done previously. They would, for instance, have been intimidated by a betting shop on a street corner, but now they're being advertised directly to play bingo online or join online raffles. And through that, they are being exposed to gambling and its harms. The other added feature, if you like, which surrounds women and gambling is that they often make friends through going to the bingo. And often when we see them in clinic, we have to separate out the social circle that they rely on and need from the gambling and find a different activity that they can undertake and yet still keep that social support. They also present with slightly different needs. So often their concerns are around family issues, unpaid bills, childcare. So they really need a real holistic support system placed around them and offered opportunities to talk and speak about their worries in a safe area, not just in a male-dominated group, for instance. So it's an area really where there is a real growing interest of how we can support women who are suffering from gambling harms.
So we've talked about men and we've talked about women, but what about children and adolescents? Are they allowed to gamble in the UK?
Yes, children and adolescents are definitely at risk of gambling harms. And of course, they can be an affected other if they have a parent gambling within their close network. The 2022 Treatment and Support Survey estimated that 12.3% of those under the age of 18 in the UK are affected by gambling. And this is because they're gambling outright, but also because video games have been compared to many types of gambling. So, for instance, in-game purchases such as loot box and skins that are paid with either real physical money or in-game virtual currencies are a thing now that children are exposed to when their parents think they're playing a computer game next door. Loot boxes are bought blind. What do I mean by that? I mean that the player doesn't know what is in it until it's been bought and opened. So the reward is random. So this can either lead to a euphoria by the player or disappointment, which are the emotions experienced and felt by an adult who gambles. So this is a real growing area of concern and a real interest for future research to see whether there is a link, how strong the link is between gaming as a child and progressing into gambling harm as an adult.
That's really quite scary that that children are exposed to this at such a young age. So finally, for this podcast, there's been a recent white paper following the review of the 2005 Gambling Act. What do GPs need to know? What do you think about the white paper?
So I think the most important thing for healthcare professionals is around the funding of treatments for gambling. And in the past, it's been funded by a voluntary levy on the industry operators. And what that has meant is that gambling operators themselves could decide how much they would contribute to treatment services. So that could be nothing, or it could be as little as £1. What the white paper has recommended is a mandatory levy, which means all operators within the scope would need to make a contribution to treatment. And this is exactly what everyone has been campaigning for, as it gives a more sustainable approach to treatment and services. And it also means there'll be additional funding for research, which there is very little of in this area at the moment, and also in education for things such as this going forward.
That does sound like a positive change. I think that's all we've got time for today. So I'd like to say a big thank you to Dr. Emma Ryan for joining us to discuss some of the harms caused by gambling. Please do carry on and listen to the second podcast in this series, where we'll talk more about what can be done in primary care within the time and resource limitations that we all face. Thank you for listening. And if you enjoyed this RCGP podcast, then please do have a look at others on the e-learning website on a variety of subjects. Thank you and goodbye.